Thanks for joining this afternoon's program of At the Root of It on the Heritage Radio Network, www.heritageradionetwork.com. And this is Aaron Fitzpatrick on the 3rd of August. And we're going to start today's show with the Week in Wine recap. In latest news, Decanter.com has released the sad news that one of the pioneers of South African wine industry, Graham Beck, has died at the age of 80 after a long battle with lung cancer. A constant champion of Method Cap Classique sparkling wines, Beck became a substantial business with the purchase of properties in Stellenbosch. Beck has been quoted in saying that his greatest achievement was to give employment to thousands of people and that this has enabled them to live better lives. And next in the crop report, a cool summer in California has vintners fretting about late harvest reports, the Press Democrat. The Sonoma County grape harvest is at least 2 weeks behind schedule, worrying growers that October rains could lend to devastating mold and crop loss. Nick Frey, president of the Sonoma County Wine Grape Commission, calls it a major concern. The season got off to a late start in May when unusually cold and wet weather interrupted the blooming of many vines. And Chris Bowen, vineyard manager of Hunter Farms, states that only 10% of the grapes have started to soften into the juicy crop that will be harvested. Ideally, the region would have 85 to 90 degree days right now. The primary risk of a late harvest is that early rains can spawn mold in grape clusters. But there is an upside too. The elongated growth season can benefit the quality of the grapes with longer hang times. Overall, Nick Frey predicts this year's harvest will be slightly smaller than average. And in the market feed, Argentina surpasses Chile in U.S. exports for the very first time, reports Wine Enthusiast. Argentinian wineries shipped just over 3 million cases of wine to the U.S. between January 1st and May 31st of this year, compared to 2.8 million cases for Chile, 97 million compared to 78 million, respectively. Rene Marino, president of Wines of Chile, dismissed the findings, noting that they are largely based on Malbec's recent gain in popularity. And before we take a quick break, I'm going to thank our sponsor today, the Barter House. The Barter House is a proud supporter of the Heritage Radio Network. The Barter House works with family vineyards and small bottlers from around the world to bring only the finest and most flavorful wines to market. To learn more about the Barter House, please visit them on the web at www.thebarterhouse.com or call them at 917-463-3076. And we'll be back after the break with my guest this afternoon, Marco Cecchini of Friuli, who's in town from Italy. So please stay tuned. You are listening to the Heritage Radio Network, and thanks to our DJ this afternoon, Nat Wiener, our engineer here, as well as our producer, Jack Inslee. And a welcome to my guest, Marco Cecchini, all the way from Friuli. How are you?
Buongiorno a tutti. Sto bene, sto bene, sto bene.
Sto bene. Okay, so we're going to proceed the rest of the interview in English, if that's okay with you.
Am I supposed to do that? I mean, I don't know if my English is proper.
Well, if you talk into the microphone,
it could
even sound better.
Okay. Let's do this.
So,
I am Marco Cecchini. I am the owner of my own winery, which is the Azienda Agricola Cecchini Marco, which is based in Friuli Venezia Giulia. Many of you don't know where it is, probably. Friuli Venezia Giulia is a small region in the northeast part of Italy. We are just between Venice and Slovenia and Austria, I mean, so the upper east corner of Italy. The boot country, I mean.
The what country?
The boot country.
The boot. Oh,
yeah,
okay,
the one that looks
okay.
like a boot. You know?
Yeah, I've heard that reference before.
Okay.
So what distinguishing qualities of Friuli would you like to talk about before we get into what you're growing there?
Well, as many regions in Italy, I mean, Friuli has different landscapes in just a few kilometers. I mean, you just can have a very nice week if you pass through Udine, Cividale or Trieste, facing the mountains, the Prealpi Giulia, then taking some nice wine tasting around the wineries in the hillside, which is in the middle, and then going down to the seaside and take some sun bath and some fun. I mean, it's small, you have nice food, the people is quite a gentle. I mean, sometimes we are rude, but that's because we are, you know,
Italian.
No, not Italian. Italian from the north, I mean, but because we are hard workers, I mean, that's the point. And in history, a lot of people passed through our region because we were conquered by Austrians, Muslims, or whatever. So
yeah, it's such an interesting kind of point in the landscape. Yeah, you're bordering so many different countries.
Yeah, that's the point. We had many influences also, and you can find them also in the food, in the architecture, which is all around, I mean, so...
So what's your relation as a region to Alto Adige and how the people that you are surrounded with in your day-to-day might differ? Or the winemakers might differ from some of the winemakers in Alto Adige?
Oh, well, first of all, it's kind of the differences in the climate. I mean, we are supposed to make the best wines in Italy because the Alto Adige wines are good, but... they have the characteristic of being very, very fresh, mm-hmm. with a high acidity. I mean, and our wines, white wines in particular, they have a very particular equilibrium between the acidity and the structure that make them very fresh, but at the same time, very rich. I mean, something that really, that you can really enjoy. I mean, it depends. I mean, any wine from any region of the world, in my opinion, have his
qualities, its special characteristics.
Yeah, special characteristics, the mm-hmm. pairings, I mean, mm-hmm. so any special way of being drunk, I mean, by the people. But so, my opinion, I mean, if you love the wine world, I mean, just taste from all over the regions, from all over the countries of the world, and try to find your way. I mean,
would you say that you know, Tokaj has really popularized the Friuli region? I mean, from living here in New York, it's kind of been a pet grape variety and a wine of many people who work in the industry.
Well,
and I think it's catching on.
Well, to be sincere, I mean, the most popular wine from the Triveneto from Friuli is the Pinot Grigio, which is a bestseller all around the world. But I really prefer the Tokaj. Something, I mean, much more close to
complex.
Complex, close to our terroir, and something that grows only in my region. It's a different wine. I mean, and if properly cultivated, it could be very mineral, very salty and fresh. I mean, mm-hmm. something very nice also to be paired with some prosciutto di San Daniele or some fish food like fish soups or maybe some come lo dici tu,
cipino.
Cipino, what's the cipino?
It's like a fish stew.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's but I mean, it's such a small production. I mean, in Friuli we produce probably the total amount, it's 6 to 8 million of bottles, which is the average production of a medium winery from Veneto or Emilia Romagna or something like that. It's not a commercial wine. It's a rarity. I mean, in this way you have to mm-hmm. drink it.
Look at the scale. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the point.
And can you, for our listeners, can you go back to the grape variety Tokaj and talk about it in respect to Hungary? Because I know there's been quite some rules and classifications have been put into place in the past couple of years.
Yeah, the problem is that we've lost the name. I mean, because European rules say that the name of the region is much more important to defend than the name of a product. So as the French guys do. I mean, they were very smart at that time. They called their wines Champagne, Bordeaux, which you can defend. I mean, so the European community decided to defend the Tokaj region, which is in Hungary. I mean, the Tokaj wine is not made with a Tokaj grape. It's made with the Furmint, which is a varietal from Hungary. And our Tokaj Frulano was supposed to change the name, and nowadays you can call it just Friulano, which is nice in my opinion, just very close to the region where we come, so it's the same for me. I mean, the quality talks, I mean, not the name.
So what other options do you have for,
for what?
Calling it other than Friulano?
It's just Friulano.
Okay, so on your as of what year?
No, we have chosen, I mean, the name. It's Friulano.
Friulano, okay.
Friulano, that's all. Friulano,
so as of what year on your bottles is it going to say Friulano as opposed to Tokaj Friulano?
Yeah, that's the point. We can just write to remind the people the past that the Friulano is made with Tokaj Friulano grapes and blah, 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 because on the rules, still the Tokaj Friulano grape exists. I mean, there is a difference between the grape, the name of the clone, and the name you can give to the wine. I mean, so the Tokaj grape exists, but it does not exist the Tokaj wine. I mean, just the Friulano. So.
Gotcha.
Go in the shops and buy Friulano. That's the point, I mean.
Well, you make one as well, no? A blend called Tove.
Yeah, the Tove is not exactly a Friulano, I mean, because it's a blend of two varietals that grows in Friuli Venezia Giulia. One is the Tokaj Friulano, the Friulano, I mean, and the Verduzzo Friulano is the other varietal. I mean, it's a 90% of Friulano, 10% of Verduzzo, I mean.
But what is Verduzzo? Is a grape variety add to the blend? Is it a higher acidity grape?
No, and it's strange. It's a strange varietal. I mean, it's one of the few white grapes in the world as rich in tannins as red grapes.
Oh, yeah?
So, yeah. Yeah, that's the point. So that's why we used to do it in a sweet way, because the sweetness of a Passito wine, of the Passito wine, balances the tannins, which give a bitter and dry and dry taste to the wine. The aim of the blend was to add some natural tannins to the Tokaj, so we can use, and everyone knows here on the radio, I hope so, that knows that tannins have an antioxidating function. So using to blend the Verduzzo allow us to use less sulfites along the whole vinification process, from the stemming crushing, where we put together the grapes, to the very end of the bottling. So the wines are lighter in some ways. It is not the alcohol that give you a bad headache, but it is the sulfites which are and the chemicals which are inside the wine. So as I am the very first consumer of my wines with my friends.
Yeah.
I like them
selfish,
to be
yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. I like them to be the more natural that I can. I
mean, absolutely. So. Yeah. So when you're not drinking your own wines, it actually leads me to another question I was curious about. What are you drinking?
In general, I try to taste the more that I can. I really love, I mean, I started my business 12 years ago, so I'm still a young wine taster and a young wine producer. I mean, and I'm fast growing in my wine culture. I mean, in my knowledge. That's the word, knowledge. Uh-huh. Thanks. And what I really like to taste every time is the French wines, because, I mean, they have a lot of story on the back and they know how to do it. And
they do.
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes it's difficult to find the right quality price rats in French wines. I mean, the very good ones are very expensive, while the ones that are cheap, they're crap. I mean, sometimes. I mean,
sometimes.
Sometimes, not always. I mean, you have to search. And one of the best, nicest things for wine lovers and wine producers, searching. We are so many wine producers and wine, so you have time all the time of your life just to find
constantly,
constantly search. I mean, and I mean some the Sauvignons from Sancerre. The wines in general, the wines from the Loire, and the Chardonnays from Bourgogne.
Yeah.
Okay. And the Bordeaux blends for sure. And I was in a tasting in Ohio and Kentucky last days and had two very nice Pinot Noir from two very small wineries in California, in Napa.
Uh-huh.
But not in the Napa, in the valley, the Napa on the mountain. They want to
distinguish the...
Yeah, to distinguish them. They were too small, not more than 20 to 30,000 bottles a year. I mean,
uh-huh.
Which are very difficult to find in Italy. In Italy, we just find
Well, they're hard to get our hands on here in the States. So yeah.
You just find the very huge wineries. I mean, so that doesn't really mean something about the winemaking.
Yeah.
In the States, in California, or whatever. So
cool, great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And leading into that too, with you when you're tasting these wines at home, what are you eating with them? What are the regional Friulian dishes?
Well, as we were talking,
besides fish,
as we were saying before, I mean, we have dishes that could vary from the seafood. I mean, made in general in the Italian way, very simple, cooked with some very good olive oil. I mean, in Friuli we started also producing olive oil,
mm-hmm.
which is of a very high and nice quality. And then you go, we used to call them poor dishes. I mean, like pasta con fagioli, la zuppa con fagioli.
Sure.
You know, the beans
yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The very, very typical dish from Friuli is the frico.
What's that?
Have you ever had a frico?
I don't think so. Maybe tell me what it is and I'll let you know.
Well, the frico, it's, I mean, it's very
actually,
nice.
Actually, maybe I don't want to know what it is.
No, you should know, definitely. Okay. I mean, you have to cook some potatoes in your pan, I mean, slowly. I mean, from raw, when they're...
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yep.
When they just start to melt, you have to add, I mean, some cheese. In general, we used 4 or 5 different cheese from the very...
Wow, this sounds like good hangover grub.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It is very greasy, I mean,
uh-huh.
You know. And then you start melts the cheese. I mean, you use 4 or 5 different cheese of different ages. And then when the crust came on the surface, you turn it and you make... It's a sort of cheese and potatoes cake.
A gratin, I mean, if you will.
Huh?
The Italian gratin. Gratin. Yeah. That's okay.
Okay.
We're going to talk a little bit about how you revitalized your land in Friuli right after this short break.
Okay.
Well, it sounds like we're having fun here on the Heritage Radio Network with Mr. Marco Cecchini. Would you like to say anything about that song that just passed?
Well, it was cool. I mean, it was very nice. I mean, the engineer here is doing a good job. I mean, I would like to have him on my terrace. I mean, I have a very nice terrace in my winery where we do parties.
Oh, sometimes. Nice.
Yeah.
Wine, vineyard parties in the...
Yeah. Yeah. Wine and design, good music parties.
Cool.
That's cool, yeah.
Now, you had mentioned you've been in the business for 12 years, and
yeah.
You were studying business or economics prior to that?
Yes, everything started 12 years ago. I mean, I was studying in Trieste International Economics and Exchange Value Markets. That
uh-huh.
sounds very cool, I mean, but in 1997, my grandfather asked me to give him a hand because... I mean, he was getting older, and the harvest is always a really tough thing to do. I mean, at that time, we were not a wine family business, mm-hmm. and the other stuff. I mean, my grandfather has just...
You had the land, but...
Yeah, but it was just less than 1 hectare of vineyards. I mean, it means producing 1,000, 2,000 bottles just for friends. I mean, we were not bottling. My grandfather was bottling anything. We were just making damigianas, you know, the damigianas, the big 54 liters. I don't know how many odds that you use. I don't know why you don't change.
What, the metric system? Yeah, can we please get on one scale?
Which is very difficult to me every time I'm here. Everyone is asking me, hey, how much is an hectare? I mean, I don't know how many acres are them. Yeah. I have to take my Moleskine and try to
translate
them.
Well, we're the only place in the world that doesn't operate this way, so it's not surprising that you can't do that conversion very fast. Okay.
And then I said, okay, Grandpa, and I started doing my very first Vendemia there, and he gave me the skills, the very first 2 years. And then till 2001, I divide my week. I mean, I passed half of the week doing my job in my winery, doing the vineyard and doing the winemaking, and the rest studying. I mean, because I had to end my university. I mean, it was something. I mean, for me, I like also international economics. It's a part of thing.
Well,
I think
it helps in the wine business as well.
No, definitely
why?
Not.
Because having a little background as to wine is a business.
Yeah. Well, you can say, but today, I mean, winemaking is much more than business than what it should be or I want it to be when I started. I mean, I'm trying to make it the dream. I mean, continuing it. That's the point.
And so you were kind of taken by the lure of it, the kind of the passionate, romantic aspect.
Yeah, that was what I liked. I mean, in the 3 years that I was studying and working, I mean, it grew slowly. And when I get my degree, I decided, I mean, to continue this job. My mama is still crying. I mean, she wanted me to be the very important marketing manager of some very cool brand all around the world. But it was not. I mean, this job is...
Well, you are. You have a cool brand now.
Yeah, it's Marco Cecchini brand.
How's
that's
that,
true.
Mom?
That's true. Well, I mean, today she's happy. I mean, we are selling worldwide, and our wines are appreciated worldwide, and it means that they're well done. I mean, I make wine to give pleasure to the people. I mean, and I want to tell the people also, please take the wine simply. I mean, sometimes in the last year we talk too much about wines. I mean, we have to talk about them in the right way. The wine should be on the table with some good dishes, the right friends on your side. You have just to enjoy it. And maybe at the end of the dinner, just talk about it.
Right.
Yeah, don't take it...
To dissect every sip.
Every sip in a too much serious way. I mean, that's not the way I look at it.
Yeah,
When I make it. I mean, I want to give pleasureness to the people all around the world. And it is. I mean, it has been drunk in Japan, in Ireland, in Belgium, Germany, now in the States.
Maybe. And who are you with in the States?
We are imported here in New York City by T. Edward Wines, I mean, and in Ohio and Kentucky, I mean, two countries that I thought never see in my life, but Vanguard Wines. Ohio and Kentucky are very nice. I mean, very nice places
never
to visit.
Never been to Kentucky.
I mean, go there.
Okay, I'll drink your wine.
Go there after being in Friuli, Venezia, Giulia, okay?
Yeah.
First come to Friuli, then take your holiday in Kentucky, in Ohio.
Or the other way around.
And so then after that, when I get my degree, I decided to continue. I rent a lot of small vineyards from all the farmers all around that were quitting their jobs. I mean, because today, you know, the business rules. So if you have a very small property, you cannot make it. Scales of economics.
So you bought more land from some of the people who were giving it up.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, and you've ever revitalized any particular of the varietals that were kind of getting displaced or were going to be lost?
Well. Well, we can say, yeah. I mean, today we are working, half of our vineyards came from old vineyards, which are 30 to 40 years old, and the other half has been reconstructed.
Uh-huh.
So they are now 7 to 10 years old. But when we replant the vineyards, I use the dots. the old dots, I mean, to make the new plants.
Okay.
So we use the old clones and varietals of some Tokaj Frulano, which were very aromatic. We use some old dots of the Piccolite, which is another grape varietal from Friuli Venezia Giulia, which is very, very rare because it suffers of a disease which is called flora abortion. That means that not the 100% of the flowers blossom and get the grapes. So you have a very low yield per hectare and low production. And after the drying and the fermentation, the filtering or whatever, you get really a few bottles of this wine.
So are you making a pasito with...
with the Piccolite.
Yeah.
In Marco Cecchini produces two sweet wines, two pasiti wines. One is made with the famous Verduzzo we were talking before.
Oh.
The very tannic one, the Verlit.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good one to be sipped and drink with some blue cheeses or with some foie gras. And then we have another pasito which is made with the Piccolite, which is much more delicate and
more floral and
pineapple aromas on the back, which is a special... We used to call it as a meditation wine. It's the wine you just open when you close the door on your back, you just lay down on your sofa, you just say to the world goodbye, and just stay by your own or with a nice person on your side. I mean,
nothing wrong with that.
No, definitely.
Yeah. I mean. The Chinese drink tea and the Italians drink Piccolite.
That's... I mean, the amounts are not the same. I mean, because probably we produce 8,000 bottles of Piccolite in all Friuli Venezia Giulia, in the old Friuli Venezia Giulia.
Wow.
You can find them. Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, they're very difficult to find.
And you're selling that here in the States, so that's...
Yeah, some. We produce an amount of 600, I mean.
Yeah.
Something like that. I mean, we are really a few to do that. I mean, maybe they are not 8,000, but just a few thousands of bottles. I mean, it's very difficult to find. I mean,
now, do you have any amphora on your
what?
Amphorae?
Amphorae?
The clay, the aging method that's often used in northern Italy, like Herman uses for aging the wines underground in the...
No, we don't. I mean, there is not... It's not so used. I mean, there are a few wine producers.
I was just curious if it was, you know...
No, I mean, it's something...
So I've recently tasted a few more. There's a producer... I was just down in Cahors, and there's a producer down there using it as well. So just...
Where? Here?
In Cahors, in the southwest of France.
Oh, okay. They're starting doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, enologically... scientifically, there is no reason to use them apart the one to have them into the soil, so that have the... there is a sort of natural temperature control of the temperature.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nonetheless, it is just a contenitor as others.
I sure, mean, it's
a... but the meaning, the big meaning, is in the philosophy that lays behind. I mean, that's trying to return back,
simplify things
and use natural materials to make wine, and the vine growing and all this sort of things. I mean, I don't know, I will never use it. I think it's something too marketing oriented, in my opinion. It's a sort of anti-marketing, which is a sort of marketing. I don't want to be rude with my colleagues. I mean, I appreciate every kind of winemaking. What I don't appreciate is when these guys just say that
it's the best way,
right. And they say that all the other wines is poison. I mean, that's not fair.
No. Now, in addition to using less sulfites, then what other things are you doing to...
Well, in general, we don't use herbicides.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It's...
That's the right term, yes.
Okay. I am sorry. And really, we make ecologically driven. I mean, it's called Lotta Integrata in Italy. There is our consortium, the DOC Colli Orientali del Friuli, that give us advice on when and what use to make the how do you say... I'm sorry,
say it in Italian and maybe I can figure it out.
Fare trattamenti fitosanitari?
Oh no,
no.
Yeah.
It's difficult to say. To spray the chemicals. Which chemicals to use, the more natural in the right moment, so we don't use too much or less, and this sort of thing. So
some guidelines.
Yeah, guidelines that allows us to use very, very few chemicals and just use copper and sulfates, which are used in the biological way. And this kind of stuff. Maybe we lose something in the production. I mean, because sometimes the weather is very...
Well, but long term, it's good for your vineyards, long term.
Yeah. We have all the insects that you want in the vineyards you can find. Yeah, we saw a lot of them. Have you ever seen, how do you call the lucciole? The one that make the light?
Sure. We call them lightning bugs.
Lightning bugs.
Yeah, very, very brilliant way to describe them.
We have a lot of them during spring. I mean, which means that the environment all around it's in good health.
I like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Before we wrap up, I want to ask you. I know you're going to be returning home soon, and kind of segueing right into the vintage. So, how was the 2010 growing season for you?
We had a very difficult moment in May, I mean, because it started raining for 15 days. I mean, we were all scared that big disease would have attacked the vines, but it was not. I mean, we do mostly a handmade work on our vineyard, so after the raining, we started taking away leaves to make the grapes much more arid, with much more air running all around. And I've worked on Saturdays and Sundays for two, three weekends. I mean, just to follow them and don't leave them alone, and everything is okay. I mean, we are on the line. Maybe there is more production of Refosco dal Peduncolo Rosso, which is a red grape varietal that grows in Friuli. It's a very good one. Try it if you find it in New York City or Brooklyn. And probably by the time I get home, we have to make some selection of the grapes.
Yeah.
Okay. Just throwing probably a 20 to 30% to guarantee the quality that every year we guarantee, I mean, to our consumers.
Thank you for that.
And to you that you all drink my wine.
Well, we have to wrap up. And I just wanted to, thanks for coming out and joining us.
Yeah, to host us.
You're having a tasting tonight, so I'll get you into Manhattan for that. But pleasure talking to you today.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks to all. And if you have time, passing Friuli and try to visit me. You can write me at info@cecchinimarco.com. I mean, write me and I can arrange how to help you to be hosted in Friuli, to find the right nice wine routes, where to eat and where to stay and where to enjoy your time. I mean, everyone goes to Venice once in his life, and 1 hour from Venice it's Friuli, and
love it.
Many very nice things to see. I mean,
excellent.
Bye.
Ciao.
Bye-bye.
And again, a thank you to our sponsor today, The Barter House, a proud supporter of the Heritage Radio Network, and to our engineer, Nat, and our producer, Jack. See you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Awesome.